Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Wildlife for You podcast. We've been doing these podcasts for a couple of years. Then we took a little hiatus and we just started them up again with our new co-host here, Meg Pelly, who hails from East Tennessee. She's kind of one of those Great Smoky Mountain National Park aficionados, just loves everything about the park. And it's great because I get to talk about one of the places I lived for a long, long time was in Tennessee, and it's near and dear to my heart. And for those that haven't been over in that area, it's just such a wonderful, wonderful place to visit and to live. And so anyway, we've been gone for a couple of weeks. I've kind of been traveling the world. I've had to do some things up in Montana for a week, and then I had some childhood buddies of mine that I've known since I was 10 years old. So we've been friends for, giving away my age here, but we've been friends for about 45 years. And they came to visit me and we spent a week hiking around Zion National Park, Bryce Canyon National Park, and it was absolutely fantastic. So we're back here to record another episode. I'll let Meg introduce that in a second. I will say we're going to do another 2-week hiatus because I have my student Wildlands Adventure Program. It's a program, it's a nonprofit we started to take students from underserved communities, wildlife students. So these are college age students that are trying to major in some type of natural resource or wildlife program. And we take them to these amazing places and destinations. Mm-hmm. And next week, I'll be heading to northern New Mexico. I'll be spending about a week with a whole bunch of students from the Southeast and looking forward to that. But that means we probably won't be doing another podcast for another couple of weeks. But today's podcast, I apologize to Meg earlier. I kind of dominated the last podcast about these wildlife urban legends, and so I promised Meg she could steal the show and run the show today, and she came up with a great idea. So Meg, I'll turn it over to you to tell me what you came up with.
Okay, well, we're gonna talk about feral pigs today, which is probably not a topic that most people would think we would talk about, but I think they're very interesting. And as you said before, I hang out in the park a lot. And I actually work in the visitor center there at Sugarlands Visitor Center in the park. And Daryl, the way I came up with this idea was we have a nature museum in the visitor center that's free. And when you walk through that nature museum, there are all kinds of animals that you would find within the Great Smoky Mountains National Park in cases in the nature museum. And in the very back, the biggest display that we have is this humongous feral pig in this giant case that stands all by itself. And I nicknamed him Al because he just looks like Al to me. So, you know, I'll walk back there and have conversations with Al as I'm working around. But it's been interesting to me. And the thing that made me think, we need to talk about that, is I overhear visitors' comments when they come through. And they're talking about that pig, you know, and they call it by several different names. And, you know, sometimes they tell their kids or tell facts that I think, that's not quite true. But unless they directly ask me, I probably don't interrupt. But I thought we need to talk about Al.
Al. Just so you know, I know Al well. I know exactly what you're talking about. And it's kind of funny because, well, I've led some of those student trips to the Smokies a couple of different years. And when we bring students from different places and we take them inside that little visitor center there, and you see all the native animals, the bears, the deer, possum, raccoon. And then there's this big old honking wild pig.
Yeah. He's big.
And usually all the students are like, you have those here?
Yeah.
And so not many people know about it. And there's a crazy, cool, and kind of upsetting history behind wild pigs or wild hogs. And so I think it's such a wonderful topic to dive into.
Yeah. And I will have to say, almost, it's interesting to me because almost everything that we talk about, probably within the next 2 weeks, I will have a visitor come to the desk and ask me about that very thing. And not that it's just curious, you know, they're just, they want to know. And so I thought, oh, I know, I can answer that question. So, you know, I thought, I'm going to be ready for when they come up and ask about Al, the feral pigs. but we do have them in the Smokies. You know, I hike a lot throughout the park, especially a lot of the backcountry trails. And I have seen the traps. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. Cages and a lot of the damage that they can do. And so, you know, people will come and ask questions. And I kind of made a list of some of the things that I would ask, or I've heard asked, or I've heard discussed among visitors while they're going through the Nature Museum. And so I'm just going to kind of shoot them at you and let you answer them.
I will be happy to do that. Okay. Before we dive into that, I want all the listeners to understand, though, this is such a good topic. Now, you mentioned that there are these wild hogs or wild pigs in the Smokies, but it is not just the Smokies problem. It is literally a nationwide problem. So we can talk, although we'll be talking about some of the hog questions that you receive, this applies to most of the states. In fact, I've got numbers about how many states and all that. If you want.
And that's one of the things I'm going to ask you is, you know, what is their range? But we'll get to that.
Okay.
So one of the first things that I hear a lot in discussions going on is it a feral pig? Is it a wild hog? Is it a wild boar? Is it a Russian boar? Is there a difference between any of those animals? Are they all the same?
Easy to answer, because guess what, Meg? A pig is a pig is a pig.
And so
if you're looking, I'll get nerdy science-y on you, but if you're looking at the genus and species, it is for a pig or wild hog or feral boar, whatever you want to call it, the genus and species is Sus scrofa. Sus is S-U-S, scrofa. Now, some of them may look very different from one pig to another, but the best way to describe that is look at man's best friend or woman's best friend in this case. If you have a dog at home, y'all know that a little pug or a Pekingese or whatever kind of dog you have might look very different than a Great Dane or a bulldog.
Right.
And so there are so many different varieties within the dog family. And that's pretty much what happens within the pig family as well. They're all pigs, but there are different varieties out there that can cause them to look very different. Now, for the most part, when we're talking about the wild hog or feral hog or pig in North America, they're going to look generally the same. There is a pocket of what many people refer to as Russian boars in that Great Smoky Mountain National Park, Cherokee National Forest area. And there's a history to that, and I can get into that later if you want. But it's still a pig. It's just a little bit different looking kind of pig, but it's still a pig.
Yeah. So, where did the Russian, let me not get ahead. I'll go to my next question because I don't want to get ahead of myself. So are the feral pigs in the park? They're not domesticated pigs that have just been turned loose and they're feral. They're like descendants of other feral pigs, correct?
Well, yes and no. They were farm pigs. And so like Cade's Cove, if you're looking at the history of that area, and we're talking Tennessee, but it's going to be a shared history no matter what part of the country that we're in. First off, the pigs came with the early European settlers. So best record, early 1500s, and you have some of those first European explorers landing in Florida and some of those Caribbean type of areas, and they brought pigs with them because they needed food to eat on the ships and when they landed. And so pigs were pretty much brought to this continent in the 1500s. Now, those early European settlers, and we'll even advance a couple hundred years, and you're looking 1700, 1800, when they're first settling inland, they had pigs with them. But you have to understand, they're really, they're living a pretty rough existence where they're trying to build things out of the natural resources they have at hand. And so it's not like they could go to the store and buy some barbed wire and mesh fencing. And so they didn't have the ability to create really elaborate fences or pens to keep their livestock in.
Mm-hmm.
And so what many of them used to do is they used to let the pigs, their pigs that they would have to feed their family, they would let them run wild. The cool thing with pigs is they don't require a lot of care. They will pretty much eat anything out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they would do is to identify whose pig was who, they would often like notch their ear, just cut their ear in different places. So one family might have the notch on top of the ear. Another one might have it lower on the ear. They would kind of mark their pig by notching the ear, and they let the pig run wild. And what they would want to do to make sure that they could catch them again when it was time for harvest is they would periodically put salt or some type of feed out there just to keep the pigs in the same general area.
Mm-hmm.
But undoubtedly, some of those pigs kind of wandered off on their own. And so started establishing these free ranging, we call them feral hogs because they're not native to North America. But many of them have been in the wild for long, long time, especially when you're looking at states like Florida, Alabama, Georgia. They've had wild pigs running loose for hundreds of years. In Tennessee, we don't have that long of a history. It's probably mid 1800s to early 1900s mm-hmm. where most of them started kind of running loose and expanding from there.
Huh, that's interesting. I didn't realize that. I knew they'd come from European settlers, but you know, I hear a lot of people go, oh, well, those pigs are just Farmer Brown down the road turned his pigs loose 10 years ago, and now they're feral, and that's what we're seeing. But these are whole generations of these pigs.
Many of them are generations. Yeah. Now, there's if you like got online and you Google feral hog maps, the USGS, US Geological Survey, they kind of keep track of hog populations mm-hmm. within North America. And you will see most of it, the entire Southeast is covered now. But you here, I'm going to quiz you, Meg.
Okay.
How many states do you think have populations of wild pigs running loose?
Oh, how many states out of all 50 states? Ooh, I'm going to say 45 to.
Yeah. Very good guess. It's up to 40 right now. Yeah. So some of those northeastern states don't have it.
Yeah.
But pretty much. The vast majority of them are in the Southeast
mm-hmm.
And along that southern border all the way to California. And you're starting to see them push northward now. But the saddest part about that map is you'll look at some states and there's just an isolated dot on the map. And you know that's where somebody turned their hogs loose. It's not like the pigs are slowly migrating. They are slowly migrating north and westward, but they're also riding in the back of a truck and getting turned loose in some places, which is just a horrible thing to happen.
Yeah.
So
you kind of answered my next question, because my next question was, what is their range? They're not just limited to the Southeast. So as you've said, they're kind of moving north and west from the Southeast, I guess.
I'm going to try something. Let me see. I was looking at it earlier since I knew what we were going to talk about. I doubt this will show up on my camera much, but
oh, yeah, it does. Wow.
I don't know. It's looking backwards to me. I don't know if it's backwards
no,
to you, but that blue is pretty much where you find the majority of feral hogs in North America.
Wow.
But you can see some of the states, there's just like little isolated dots all over the map.
Yes.
And that's unfortunate because that is definitely where someone has turned some pigs loose or they escaped, but more than likely it was intentional.
But yeah. Well, we know that they cause a huge problem. I read that it's estimated $1.5 billion worth of damage nationally to the agriculture and to the environment. So that's pretty significant. problem. But what kind of problems are we talking about? So,
well, let me ask you first. You spent a lot of time in the park and pretty much all over East Tennessee. Have you ever encountered or seen one?
Yes, I have.
Okay. That's pretty cool. they're very, very elusive. And so a lot of people don't even realize that they're on the landscape. The best way to tell or know that you have these wild hogs on the landscape, if you see where they have been rooting, you will, if you're hiking in the mountains, you will come upon a hillside that looks like someone took a rototiller
yep.
and just tilled up the whole area. And that is where that group of pigs, do you know what it's called?
I do. I actually wrote it down because I knew you would ask me that.
You were doing your research.
Wait, it's talking about an S. What is it called? A
sounder.
Yeah, there you go. See, told you it started with an S.
Yeah, so a sounder is pretty much like a whole group of, they're pretty much related. Mom and a whole bunch of offspring because yeah. they're prolific breeders.
Yeah.
But when those pigs start growing, you have a big group of pigs. They will come into an area and they got a pretty stout nose. Oftentimes they have tusks and they will root around and kind of rototill the dirt, looking yeah. for grubs, looking for roots, looking for plants. They will eat anything yeah. that they find. And it's very damaging. So imagine that's in the mountains of East Tennessee. Imagine if you're a farmer that has just planted a whole field of fresh corn and suddenly a giant sounder of wild hogs comes in there, you can lose your whole crop.
Mm.
And when you mentioned it, what you say, $1.5 billion yeah. worth of damage, the vast majority of that is crop damage.
Mm-hmm.
It's devastating to these farmers when these feral hogs come into their freshly planted fields or even their full grown fields, they'll mow them down. And it's just awful. So the vast majority of damage is going to be crop damage.
I have been in the mountains and come across areas where they, just like you said, it looks like somebody took a rototiller through landscape that you would not think could be torn up that easily. Yeah, it's right. pretty amazing the damage that they do. And then I've also come across where they wallow. And yeah. we'll talk about that in a little bit, but it's a very obvious spot that you can tell that they've been in.
Do you know why they wallow?
They don't sweat, so they have to.
Oh, very good. Yeah.
You didn't think I knew that, did you?
No, that was awesome.
But it's what I would do if I didn't sweat. No.
I do it even though I do sweat. So.
But so we do know they're tearing up forestry and you know, in the Smokies, they're damaging a lot of the native plants, which gives the non-native invasive species a chance to jump in there on that soil that they've torn up, because so many non-native plants just need a little bit of dirt to get started, you know? And so when they tear that up, that...
But look how delicate Great Smoky Mountain National Park is. You have some plant species that are only found in that area. And if they're found in just a small area
yeah.
and you get wild hogs moving into there, it can be, they can wipe out an entire species in the blink of an
yes.
eye.
Yes. Yes. That's why they don't like them.
Right.
And also, I read that they can really be damaging to livestock. And so do they, they're driving livestock away is what I would assume.
Yeah. Well, not just livestock, but even native wildlife, not just plant species, but
right.
native wildlife species. The thing is, and you probably know this, but these feral hogs are pretty, pretty pushy and they're dominant. They don't back down. They're afraid of humans. So you don't see them out too much. If they see people, they run.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to deer and other animals that are feeding there, the pig will be that dominant animal. And so let's start with the wildlife. You have an oak tree that's going to produce a ton of acorns.
Yeah,
we like to call that hard mast. But those acorns will feed countless wildlife species, from squirrels to turkeys to bears to all sorts of birds, you name it. They're going to, those oak trees are feeding the native wildlife. But then you get pigs come in and they're literally like vacuum cleaners. So they're eating all the foods from the native wildlife. So you have a decrease in health of those native populations. Right. Same thing can happen with livestock. If they get into where other life, they can outcompete with someone's livestock. The thing that it's not as big of a problem, but people don't realize that these hogs are omnivores, very much like bears. Mm-hmm. So they will eat anything and everything. So not just vegetation, but they will eat snakes and lizards. They've even been known to kill and eat newborn animals. So whether or not it's a newborn fawn or even a newborn calf,
wow,
these pigs can be very overwhelming in some areas where there's too many of them.
They eat like a tremendous amount of food a day and a percentage of their body weight, which was
I think I read the same thing, about 3% of their body weight. So you have say you have 100-pound, or there's the big ones will be 200-pound hogs. They're eating 6 pounds of food, you know how much vegetation it takes to make 6 pounds?
Yeah.
It's quite, and they're eating that every day.
Yeah.
And then you have a big pack of hogs and there's 10, 20 of them in there. There's a lot of natural forage that is being consumed by these invasive predators.
So we've talked about what they do to plants. We talked about what they, the forest and forestry and livestock and wild animals, but what's the risk to humans other than encountering them? And I'll start with that because that's what I know. Encountering them when you hike. And you asked me a moment ago if I had ever encountered. I've encountered 3.
I was going to ask you, did you ever have a kind of butt-clenching encounter with
them? Yeah, well, I was hiking in the park on the Boulevard Trail, which is a long trail that comes off the 18, goes up to Mount LeConte, and peeling around, kind of on my own little world as I'm hiking along, and came around a bend in the trail, and there were 3 of them standing there. And I had heard before this that you don't want to encounter these pigs out in the wild because they would be way more aggressive than a bear would be towards you.
Yeah.
And so my first thought was like, oh no. And because I had never really even worried about that or thought about it. But as you said, we stopped and you can tell us if this is a wives' tale or not. I've always heard that they cannot see well. And I don't know if that's true. but we just stopped and stood there for a minute and it was like they caught our scent and they moved on, or they realized we were there and they moved on. They didn't all want to be around us. So, but I've talked to people who said they've had them charge at them before.
Oh yeah. I could tell you a funny story. I have not had many encounters with them. I've seen them like driving back roads here and there, but when I was out hiking on a trail, I never had any rough encounters. But there was a bear biologist. His name was Jay Clark. When I was working at the Appalachian Bear Center, he was helping in tracking a lot of the cubs that we had released. Mm-hmm. And so he was this just amazing outdoor backwoods person. And he came up over a rise and he saw feeding in the field, the back of an animal. And he thought it was a bear and he thought it was a young bear and he wanted to scare it. So he kind of stood there, and when it fed closer, he kind of jumped out and went,
"Oh no!"
to scare the bear away. And it lifted its head and it was a wild, wild pig.
Oh no.
And it didn't like being scared. So instead of running away, it ran at him. And so he found himself in a predicament. If that ever happens, you try to find a tree and put a tree between you and them.
That's what I was going to ask you, is what do you do?
Yeah, you run fast.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. So what kind? I have read that they can pass on diseases, and some to humans. So
Yeah, they're not the cleanest of animals. And so a pig in itself is, it's kind of, I don't want to say it's got a bad rap. It has a deserved bad rap because of the number of diseases that it can carry. And so there's kind of a couple of different classes of diseases. There's the diseases that kind of transmit among wildlife. And so they can carry some of those. For example, like pseudo rabies. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but that can be passed from pigs to other domestic animals. It's bad news if that gets into a livestock herd. And so they're really careful with that. But then there's other classifications of diseases that are called zoonoses. And those are the diseases that go from a wild animal to humans. And so one of the big ones with when it comes to wild hogs is called brucellosis. And people don't realize it, but if you were to handle a wild hog and get their blood or saliva or some of the bodily fluids on, say, an open wound or in your eyes or one of those sensitive places, that you can, if that pig is carrying brucellosis, you can then become infected. The scary thing with that, it's so many of the diseases will cause like fever and body ache and chill. The scary thing with that is you could have like contact with that wild hog, but the disease itself may not manifest for up to 6 months later. So it's hard to pinpoint exactly why you're not feeling good because you may have contacted a pig and not had anything go wrong for a number of months. Well, you wouldn't necessarily relate it to catching something like that. And it's tricky because when you go to the doctor because you're not feeling good, you gotta let the doctors know some of the things you've been exposed to, and sometimes it's not too easy to remember all those
Well, and
things.
you probably would not think about a wild pig as being, we tell about.
Yeah, and I will say there has been, because in Tennessee, where you're at, the Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency has, they're trying like crazy to eradicate, they'll never eradicate, but at least control the pig population. And so doing trapping and other events. I remember a long time ago, a couple of the employees had exposures to brucellosis just because they're handling it so much. So it's a definite concern. But besides that brucellosis, there's like parasites. Obviously, people eat pork, and a wild pig is very much like a farm-raised pig. Some people will say it doesn't taste as well because it's gamier, but you can eat pig. A pig is a pig is a pig. And so the concerns there, though, then you have parasites, trichinosis, some of the parasites that are found in wild game are especially found in those feral pigs.
So I also read that they can carry waterborne pathogens that can contaminate your drinking water or
Yeah. Well, just their behavior being in the wild, and if they find a pond that they wallow in, the defecation, or even a stream in the Smokies, by them just being in those streams, they can introduce those pathogens into the waterways. And so, yeah, they're not the greatest animal to have around.
That is why we say, please filter the water you get out of the streams in the Smokies.
Yeah, and it's not just from pigs, because any animals can contaminate a water source, but the thing that's bad is those pigs are not supposed to be there. So that's why it makes it worse.
So, we talked about at the very beginning of this a little bit, Al, and Al is quite large. And
Yes.
we said that I know that their weight can get up to 200 pounds in the males for sure. But let's talk about some of the other characteristics of the feral pigs that make them different from like a farm animal pig. And one of the things you notice right away is they're hairy and their hair is long. Where you look at a little pig on a farm and you think of, I'm dating myself here, but Green Acres, and remember little Arnold on Green Acres?
Oh yeah.
So
Every time I visit my dad, I got to watch Green Acres.
Your dad and I need to get together because I like that show.
I could sing that opening song. I'm not gonna, but I can.
But, you know, domesticating pigs, their hair is very, very different. And obviously their tusks are not like what we see in the feral pigs. So what is going on? Why are they changing so when they get out in the wild?
I'm trying to think of the best way to describe this. You may not have seen it. There is a show on TV. Have you ever heard of Naked and Afraid?
Yes, I've not watched it.
There's a show, and what they do is they take people to these really difficult environments, whether or not it's Africa or the jungle, and they ask them, or the challenge is for them to survive 21 days in the wild. Obviously, I think the big thing that catches everyone is they're naked. But the crazy thing, Meg, if you watch that show, one of the things they do, they have a before and after photo of the person. And so after 21 days, you would not believe the transformation in these humans, where they go from being clean cut and, their characteristics change dramatically just in a period of three weeks. So they have all this facial hair that's growing. Even the women, well, not the facial hair, but they look completely different. They get gaunt, but their characteristics change tremendously when they're not in that manicured
cushy environment.
Yeah. So those domestic pigs are oftentimes in a pen somewhere where they're rubbing up against each other. They're rubbing against the fences or wherever they're sleeping. And so they're just well taken care of. They're watered. And these wild pigs, they go wild really quickly. It usually takes a generation or two, but they really begin to look much meaner and nastier. And the crazy thing, and I don't even know how to describe, like, the tusk growth. Farm pigs will eventually grow those, but they usually don't live long enough to grow them the way a typical farm operation works. So, but yeah, it's amazing how wild looking those pigs can get, but humans can get pretty wild looking after 3 weeks in a jungle somewhere.
I can see me 3 weeks in the jungle. How much more?
Can you imagine like where your hair would be?
Because it's halfway.
But it would be just all frizzled and all over the place. And so, yeah, it's you just look like you're a wilder animal after a short period of time.
Well, you know, I read a few of the things that change on them besides just the hair, but like the ears are smaller than, you know, you see these little cute pig floppy ears, but on these feral pigs, they're not like that. They're much smaller, more erect standing. So that changes. Their tail is not the cute little curly Q, but straight and hairy. And now we're going to talk about this one because their body shape even changes, you know, and we talk about, I'm not a big, big sports person, but who is it that's called, is it Arkansas Razorbacks? Yeah.
See,
I got it. There you go. You know, they kind of get that ridge along their back and their shoulders.
Yeah. And that's where you can see how quickly they change. And those Russian boars, that's what you're describing, with that ridge on their back, it's like a really high arching shoulder, and it tapers down. And you could see how easy it would be to propagate by just the domestication process, where you can get a pig that's looking more like you want it, and then you breed that pig. And so it'd be easy. It's not like super easy where you could do it just in a matter of weeks. It would take years and years and years, but you can definitely change the way pigs look simply by by breeding them to other certain pigs. And that's how those Russian boars, it's the same way with the dogs. The German Shepherds and the Great Danes and the Pugs, that's been like hundreds, if not thousands of years of selecting for that particular trait so they look like that. And so obviously you don't have as much variation in the pig family. Like a Russian boar looks somewhat like a farm pig. It's got higher shoulders, but it still looks like mm-hmm. a pig. Where you can even admit a pug dog does not look like a Great Dane dog. No. They're like, they should be completely different species, but they're not.
Yeah, and you know, another thing is the color. I have, all the pigs that I have seen, even Al in the visitor center, they're dark. You know, they're dark or yeah. they're a combination of dark colors. You don't see much white or light in them.
That generally happens over time. So the darker they tend to be like, they've been in the wild longer. Because if you sometimes see some feral pigs or feral hogs that are looking very, very farm-like, they might have only been in the wild a few generations. But over time, they definitely will adapt to that darker coloration. Their body becomes more streamlined so they can get through the vegetation easier. So anyway, adaptations occur at a pretty rapid rate. And one of the reasons, and I'm sure you're going to ask this, they are crazy prolific breeders. Like a female pig can give birth before it's even a year old. Usually it goes until it's about a year old. But then after that, she can give birth to a litter of pigs. And so anywhere from like 4 to 14, it can have as many as 18. But just a whole bunch of pigs twice a year, usually two litters every 12 to 15 months, which they're producing so many yeah. offspring that the ones that are adapted for that more wildlife are the ones that survive. The ones that are bright pink,
yeah,
they're not gonna survive too well because they'll get picked off by other predators or whatever.
Right, so. And that was one of my next questions is, and you kind of answered it. They can start breeding before they're even a year old, so normally around a yes. year. And how well we talked about that the full grown males usually get around 200 pounds, but what about the female?
Well, they can get bigger. It very much like bears. It all depends on the food source. And so if they get into crazy ample food sources, for example, if some of those feral hogs find some agricultural areas where there's lots of cornfields and they're just eating tons and tons every day, you can get wild hogs that will weigh 300 or 400 pounds. It's pretty rare, but a lot of it depends on their access to right. food.
And I would say a lot of that depends on the amount of precipitation that we get that year, because you know that's yeah. going to affect the food source. That's also going to affect their wallowing.
You are lucky where you're at in the Southeast, like Tennessee. Most of those southeastern states, they get a fair amount of precipitation. Yeah, you'll have some dry spells. But if you look at areas that are more arid, like Texas can experience long dry spells. But it's amazing the difference in weights of animals when it's a wet year compared to a dry year. When it's a wet year, all the plants are blooming, lots of nutritious plants and food out there, and the animals mm-hmm. benefit from it. When it's very dry for a couple of years on end, you see lower weights of animals, but you hit the nail on the head where the amount of moisture you get can dictate how big the animals can get.
So we've been talking about their size, but how long do they usually live for?
It's maybe, it's the younger ones are more susceptible. And that goes for any animal living in the wild. When you're really young, you're more at risk of getting killed. But once you get over that first couple year hump, they can live anywhere 4 to 8 years. So they're not extremely long lived. Like some bears can live to be 20 years old. Pigs are less than that, but it's still a lot longer than many other animals, especially those smaller animals usually only live a couple years, but pigs
they can outlive turkeys.
Yes.
That's why I said that. It was a joke. And we did talk a little bit about what they're eating. They are omnivore. They will eat small reptiles, snakes. They could eat all the frogs they wanted, and I'd be perfectly happy. I do not like frogs.
Well, they could be damaging. Like if they come across like a ground nesting bird, if they come across a nest with eggs in it, say goodbye to that nest. And so, they're just human, not human. They're pig vacuum cleaners. They'll just eat.
So I need to rename Al and call him Hoover. Hoover, Al Hoover. There we go. Al Hoover. That's what I'm going to name.
There you go.
I did read something I thought was kind of interesting. They are not necessarily solitary. They are kind of a family unit. We talked about being a sounder, now that I remember, that their groups are called. But I thought it was interesting that it's usually a dominant female who leads the group.
Yep. Mama rules the
if
nest.
If mama happy, ain't nobody happy. So.
Yeah, and I'm sure you'll probably get into, well, put it this way, that can work in their favor, but it could also work against them when you're trying to manage them. And so if you're going to ask that question later, okay. We'll get into it now, but because what you want to do if you're trying to reduce their population, you got to try to capture the whole sounder. And one of the key things is that mama pig.
Mm-hmm. And we are going to talk about that in just a minute. But before we get to that part, just kind of a few random facts I wanted to ask you about. One of them is, where do they like to nest or sleep or, spend their nap time? Where?
Well, first of all, they're what we call habitat generalists, which means they can live anywhere. From deserts to forests to swamps to whatever. There are some animals that require very, very specific habitat needs, and they can only live in those places. But animals like pigs, even bears, cougars, I always bring that up. there's none over there. But a lot of these animals can live in pretty much any type of environment. And pigs could do the same. In fact, there's been some, I don't want to call it research, but some findings lately that they're thinking that the wild hogs might be limited by like places with a lot of snowfall, but there's some wild hog populations that are popping up in Canada. Mm. So it doesn't appear to be stopping them. So a pig can pretty much live anywhere, but they do like, their little sanctuary areas where they can raise their piglets and get away from humans or any other animal that might bother them. So they like those very dense underbrush where you're at in the Smokies or Cherokee National Forest, those rhododendron thickets, that's where you'll find they will just dive into those. And if you ever try walking through that, I tried walking through one a couple of years ago, and I had a backpack on and a couple of jackets. And by the time I got on the other side, every zipper on every piece of clothing I had was open because it was just clawing at.
Yeah.
So they love those areas because they feel safe in those thickets.
And so will they tend to stay around stream sources or because,
Yeah. Well, just think they have basic needs that we have, food and water. And you can go a long time without food, but you can't go too long without water. So obviously water, there's a saying, especially in the Southwest. I forget the Spanish, how to say it in Spanish, but it's water is life. And so whenever you have a water source, you know you're just going to have just numerous amounts of wildlife diversity, whether or not it's different plants and different mm-hmm. animals, because they all mm-hmm. need water.
We talked earlier about they wallow because they don't have sweat glands. So is wallowing the only way they have to cool themselves off?
No, it helps, because obviously when you wallow, and what we mean by wallowing is they'll kind of get into a water or a mud puddle. And there's actually a couple of reasons it helps when you get covered in mud. Besides cooling you off, it can provide a very minimal layer of protection against biting insects. So it just helps keep them more comfortable. But one of the things that most wild animals do in order to keep their body temperature under control is they're not active in those peak sunrise hours. So from 9 o'clock in the morning till 3 o'clock in the afternoon, when you have the sun at its highest point, most animals are not active. And so a feral hog, as well as many other wild animals, are just going to be laying down in the shade somewhere until it begins to cool off, and then they'll get up and about again.
So let's talk about how do we control them. And I guess my first question is, and I'm sure this is probably state by state, can you hunt them? You know, is that a state by state regulation?
Oh, this is a sticky here. Okay. And just so you know, I have a tremendous amount of experience with this issue, because when I was in Tennessee, I was the chief of wildlife for the state of Tennessee. And that was a big issue that was going on, because at that point, wild hog populations were just expanding. And so there was a lot of people clamoring of, if we could just hunt these hogs. If you don't want their population to expand, let's just hunt them. And that's what the state of Tennessee and many other states did for decades, is they would let people hunt the hogs to hopefully control their population. Mm-hmm. Here is the issue with that. Do you know anyone that hunts?
Yeah.
Do they like to
hunt?
They do, yeah. So therein lies the problem. If you're using something that people enjoy doing, nobody's going to hunt that animal until there's no more, because they enjoy hunting right. that animal. And not only that, and this is where the biggest issue arose, was if for example, if I lived in Tennessee, say I lived in somewhere west of Nashville, and I had to drive 3 hours to Cherokee National Forest to go hog hunting because I really liked hog hunting. And then you think, you know what? I could just take some pigs and turn them loose where I live in West Tennessee and hunt them there, because you can hunt them anywhere in the state. And that's why a lot of these populations started popping up in places they never were supposed to pop up. And so sadly, and I don't want to paint hunting in a bad light right. at all, but there were, the best way to describe it, there was unscrupulous individuals that said, hey, I'm going to start a hog population over here so yeah. I can hunt over here. And then suddenly, with the increase in these hog hunting opportunities, you started seeing these pockets of pigs show up in places they were never supposed to be. And so in Tennessee, we called a timeout and said, whoa, this is bad. This hog hunting is not eliminating hogs. It's causing them to uh-huh. spread faster. And so Tennessee was one of the states. There's a couple other states. I believe it's Missouri. I could be wrong. But there's a few states that pretty much said there is no sport hunting of hogs. We don't want it to become, hey, this is a fun thing to do. Let's go. We don't want it to become a money-making type of thing, or just an activity that everyone loves to do, because they will want more and right. more of it. And so what many states did is they would make it illegal to recreationally hunt hogs, but they would loosen the regulations. So if you're a landowner or anyone that's having problems with wild hogs, you can deal with those wild hogs in means that are even far beyond what like a normal hunting season. Normal hunting season, you're shooting them with a gun or a bow and arrow. But now they're allowing landowners to trap them at night, to use spotlights, to use things you don't normally use for hunting, just to help those landowners remove those hogs. So the bottom line, Meg, what we're trying to do, or what those states were trying to do, was turn this wild hog, instead of this charismatic, fun thing to go hunt, we want to turn it into a nuisance animal, like vile, and we don't want this animal around here. We want to get rid of it as soon as we see it. And so that's why there's a really strong debate about hunting hogs. Now, in some of those states like Florida and Texas, they've been hunting them for hundreds of years. And so that's not going to change. We'll put it this way. They've been hunting. You can kill as many as you want in Florida and Texas. How well have they controlled their hog problem?
And that was one thing I was going to say. You know, there's no way you're going to be able to eradicate by just letting hunters go out and hunt for sport. And, you know.
Exactly, because they're not killing enough. And the other bad thing is, you mentioned they live in these family groups, these sounders. So if there's someone there who starts shooting at them, guess what? You might get one or two, but the rest of them scatter and they go farther and farther away. And so the best means of control, or the best means of management, is typically trapping. And this is where that mama rules the roost type of thing is good for them, but it could be bad, because what we try to do is we'll set up hog traps that are fairly large. It'll be a big circular pen with an open door, and you can bait it with whatever you want to bait it with, corn primarily. And you wait until the mama will go in. And then once mama goes in, usually the other younger pigs will follow her. And you want to, I believe the number is, you have to remove at least 70% of the hogs on the landscape just to maintain the population. Wow. And so you better be catching 7 out of 10 just to control their population. And that's why you got to try using trapping, because you're not going to do it using hunting alone.
And I have seen those in the park. So let's talk just a few more minutes about those, about trapping them, because I have seen the singular cages where you're not going to catch the whole family. That
used to be quite common a few decades ago, where it was a single hog.
But recently, I saw a picture that someone had posted on Facebook who had been hiking in the Smokies and had seen what you're talking about. The round, almost looks like fencing. Yes.
It's like
and,
a Koran
you know,
trap.
They were questioning why they had such a large fencing area to catch these hogs. And, you know, I understand why. Hopefully our viewers are going to understand better now why they have that, to catch the whole family. Otherwise you're not really doing any good. But one thing I thought was really interesting, and you mentioned they're circular and not square. And because of what I thought was kind of an interesting reason, hogs are very smart and they're figuring out how to get out of the square ones.
Well, it also creates a weak point. If you have that corner, the hogs will focus their efforts there. And they're big animals. They can knock fences down. So when it's circular, there's no area where they could focus their efforts.
And I also read, if you have the whole family bunch and they all kind of move together into that corner, they'll pile on top of each other and one will get out. We know they're really good at rooting, obviously. So, you know, a lot of.
You've got to construct those traps, take a lot of T-posts and a lot of wearing, you've got to build them so they are strong, because those, once the gate closes and they realize they're trapped, they're going to be banging against the sides trying to get out. And they can, if it's pretty flimsy, they'll knock something over in a heartbeat.
So, you know, that kind of answers the questions about what we're seeing in the Smokies as far as these larger traps. That's actually a good thing, you know, to remove the whole family. And, you know, it's always kind of sad when we have to come on here and talk about a species that we need to eradicate. But I think we've listed so many reasons why that's true. We need to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Can I tell you a couple more things about the trapping? And this, again, when I was back in Tennessee, but we were, and this is 10 years ago or so, when we were first exploring these corral traps to catch a whole bunch of pigs at once instead of one at a time, one or two at a time. And so they're so sophisticated now. It's kind of cool because you can set up the trap and you want to bait it and let the pigs get used to coming in without the door closing. And so over a couple of days, they'll get used to coming in, because if you don't get most of them, then your efforts are futile if you're only catching one or two. And so you can set that trap up and set it with a camera that is motion activated. And then as a biologist who's working on this hog control, you can get a text on your phone that will notify you that pigs are by the trap. And then you can tune in and look at the camera and you can watch the hogs going. And then you have a switch on your computer. If you're at your computer, you can then be the one to trigger that gate to close as soon as the last one's in there. So it's kind of sophisticated. Some of the hogs.
That is pretty neat. I doubt that's what they're doing in the park, just because there's the signals of...
right. Yeah, in some places you can't do it.
But how neat is that? No. It's amazing what we can do from our phones.
It's only going to get worse.
Well, you know, we've pretty much talked about all of my questions, and we're pushing right at an hour. We've been talking about pretty much all of my questions, but do you have anything else that you want to add that you could think of that we hadn't talked about with these? You know, one thing I will is, you know, we talked about hunters hunting them and how that's not a very effective way. And even if you could make it more effective, unless if you own a farm and you're hunting these animals, and maybe you do get them all off of your farm, but if your neighbor's having problems and he doesn't, it's kind of like the fire ants in South Carolina. If you don't get rid of your...
You get them out of your yard, but
they just move back and forth. And so, you know, I would imagine that's what you would see with these hog populations, is there's so many, you may get rid of them for a while off of your property, but if your neighbor's not doing it, it doesn't do you any good. So tracking all of these would be a better way.
Yeah. It's sad to say we're not eradicating hogs. And Tennessee was trying to take that stance many years ago that they could eradicate it. They're not gonna. The only thing you can hope for is that you can control their numbers. And even that's, I don't want to say it's an effort and futility, but it's a lot of work, because how many pigs you have to remove each and every year just to maintain their population. But if you're a landowner, there's ways in the states. Most states will help you do that if you're serious about it. Here's the thing. You asked me if I had anything to add. The hog problem was one of the things I hated the most when I was working in Tennessee, because it seemed like there was no solutions, and you're trying to come up with solutions, and everything you come up with is either not going to work managing the hogs, or it's gonna, pardon the French, it's gonna piss off a lot of people. Because when you say, hey, you can no longer hunt these, lots of people get upset. And so it was kind of like a lose-lose situation. And eventually when I left Tennessee in 2016, I'm like, woohoo, the hog problems are behind me.
Nope.
Well, lo and behold, they spread all the way, they go all the way to California. And I looked, just because I didn't know much having moved to Utah. And sure enough, we have some hog populations in Utah. So the dang pigs are following me around.
Hey, listen, don't be moving around any more states then, okay?
Yeah. Better not.
So, Darryl, I know we're going to be out for the next couple of weeks, but I think it would be interesting to talk about your trips that you are making with these students, because we haven't talked a whole lot about that, but I think that is a fantastic opportunity for these kids. And I didn't major in wildlife when I was in college. Had I known the opportunities, I might have, could have.
Yeah. My wife says the same thing, where she said if she could do it over again, she wants to be a sea turtle biologist.
I would have probably loved to have been a wildlife biologist and work for the park, it's very interesting. But I do want to talk about that because I try to share that with everybody I come in contact with who I think might benefit from it. And I think that would be a good discussion.
I appreciate that. I have a feeling some people like might not be interested in it, but there's going to be a handful of people to say, this is really cool. I wonder how I can get involved. And that's
what
I'm
hoping for.
But actually, what I might do, Meg, I don't know if I could. I'm totally not tech savvy, and it took us how long to get this podcast?
We had to have help from the younger generation. Let's just admit it.
if we could figure it out after this upcoming trip. So next, it starts July 8th. So next Saturday, we have 13 students from the Southeast. Here's the thing. They're all women. They're all female wildlife students. And we're trying to figure out why. Here's the funny thing. We're trying to figure out why we get so many women applying for it. The application process, because we're trying to find the students in the most need, like who is coming from either a racially diverse background or a financially strapped background, who doesn't get the opportunities afforded to most people. And so we put in there, I say they're essay questions, but we're not looking for an essay. We're just looking for a couple sentences. And so some of them are like, describe the national parks you have been to and which one's your favorite. And it's just to get a feel for their need. And the fact that we say there's four essays, the guys are like, I'm not going to bother doing it. And so this year we had there was one male that applied and he was actually selected, but then he was offered a part-time job with the Forest Service, I think doing firefighting. So he had to turn it down. So I'm thrilled. We have all females make way better students than males because males think they know everything. I'm getting myself in trouble here.
Maybe you need to change the application and from not as many essay questions and put some true false. I'm trying to help the guys out.
I'm not gonna like knock it down. I think it's a really good application, and it does help us to select some awesome students. So, anyway, not this Saturday, but the following Saturday, we have 13 students, all from the Southeast. Most of them are from Tennessee. I know there's one coming up from Florida, but they're all flying into Albuquerque. And then myself and my colleague, Robert Brewer, who's down in Cleveland State Community College. You probably heard of that. It's me and him tag teaming these field trips. And so we're staying outside of Taos, New Mexico, which is heaven on earth. I was just going to say, if you know, so you know the Rio Grande Gorge Bridge. We're going to be doing field trips there and in the caldera. Can you imagine most of these students that we're taking have never left Tennessee? So it's going to be such a different experience for them.
They need to go watch the opening credits for Longmire, the TV show Longmire, because that's where they're going to be in that caldera. So
we're taking them there. One of the days is the field trip there, and we have the gentleman from the National Park Service.
I'm so jealous because you took us up there, but
But anyway, what the whole point of this, bringing this up, is if I can figure it out, it might be neat to get one or possibly two of the students to join us, and we can ask them some questions.
Oh, yeah. I bet one of your students could tell you how to figure it out.
Yeah. If you become the general manager and producer of our show, we'll let you talk.
If you help these old people out who can't figure this out.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Well,
so anyway, this was a great show. I hope folks listening and watching this have learned a little bit about feral hogs. They're cool animals, but they're they shouldn't really be here, especially roaming. That you can have them on your farm, but not roaming around in the wild. Yeah. But Meg, fantastic topic, fantastic questions, and I thank you for bringing this up. I'll let you come up with all the topic ideas from here on out.
Well, I'm glad. I always enjoy talking to you, Daryl. Always learn so much. And as I said, somebody in the next 2 weeks, they're going to ask me these questions. I just know because, and I'll be able to answer them.
All right.
I learned a lot.
Well, you just referred to Al.
Also, let's go back here and talk to Al Hoover for just a little bit.
There you go. So fantastic show, Meg. I appreciate you coming on. And remember, folks, when it comes to wildlife, your knowledge often means their existence. So anyway, until next time, we'll see you then. All right. Bye-bye.